My guest today is the official spokesperson to the Nigerian president. He is special advisor on media and publicity, Ajuri Ngelale.
He had to make some difficult decisions. Things were much worse than he anticipated, certainly. Mm-hmm. But we are not, unlike, I think, administrations in the past, we're not hanging our hat on excuses. We're not telling Nigerians, oh, things are so bad and this is what it is. No. We're not saying that that is an excuse for failure or a justification for undue hardship.
We have this interview as this administration clocks 9 months.
I believe over the last 8-9 months, it's been extremely painful for Nigerians. It's been painful even for President Bola Tinubu. But he, in the sense that he has had to watch our people suffer, he has had to watch the Naira depreciate simply because we don't have finance to buffer and bolster the national currency while it's falling.
It's also happening on the eve of a planned nationwide strike, mass action, by the Nigeria Labour Congress.
There was a presidential candidate who I don't need to name. Who was publicly endorsed and supported by the labor movements that you are referring to.
Would that be Peter Obi?
I think Nigerians know. Things are hard in the country. Mm-hmm. And if the NLC or any other labor union comes out and says that things are hard in the country, they're telling the truth.
We talk about the rising cost of foodstuff. We talk about Beta Edu and Emefiele. We speak about Dangote and Gbajabi Amila. We talk about the president's handling of the ECOWAS. How did he bungle ECOWAS?
I love that we can laugh about this because your question was just, I love the word bungle.
I ask these hard questions and Ajuri doesn't flinch. Welcome to With Today Special.
Come for me.
I come back to the minimum wage, you know, that worries me deeply, you know.
Yes, and
the legal regime for the minimum wage as we have it is supposed to expire around April, I think. And I know that the vice president has instituted this wide-ranging committee to kind of invest, kind of think through what the minimum wage should be to simplify that. Mm-hmm. The NLC, I think, has floated the idea that it should be 1 million naira, you know, minimum wage. And some news reports have claimed that you have hinted that it will be double what it presently is. Yeah, whatever that is, 30,000 naira, I can't wrap my head around anybody surviving on 30,000 naira in this country.
In the current economic climate.
In the current economic climate. I don't even know that people can afford to sit out the hardship, to wait for the credits with 30,000 naira.
Right.
What is going to happen with minimum wage?
So this is interesting. So the minimum wage is obviously one of those points where government can provide succor to our people in view of, you know, rising energy costs, food costs, and the like. And it is a deliberate process because we don't want to make the mistake of past administrations, really from 1999, who adjust the minimum wage and it becomes kind of a moving goalpost. What we're trying to do is, you know, when we say we're going to stabilize the value of the currency over the long term, factors like the pegging of a minimum wage factor into that, right? So what we don't want is a situation where we'll say, okay, tomorrow it's 50,000 naira. Then because we haven't dealt with the long-term issues that undergird a process in which your currency continues to slide, because we haven't brought stability to the currency value, it almost makes nonsense out of anything you're doing with the minimum wage. So we're trying to deal with both of those issues and saying that, look, based on our actions today, we can assure that the currency value will in the future not go below this point. And on the basis of that knowledge, we can now peg minimum wage at, and again, this is a hypothetical figure, the committee is doing its work. We can peg it at 60,000, we can peg it at 100,000. Whatever we're going to peg it at, we'll peg it at. But whatever we peg it at is going to be pegged within the larger environmental context of what is livable, you know, for at the bottom rung of the economic ladder in our country. All right. So that is the focus. I think The president does not want to fumble things because he thinks something needs to be done tomorrow. He's the kind of person that says, I'm going to do this once and I'm going to do it right. And when I do it once and do it right, for the next 25 years, you'll see the product.
I want to talk about the currency crisis, because when people want to point to how bad things have gone,
right,
that's a very easy one to do.
Of course.
I was reading the Economic Intelligence Unit issued a report, you know, the AP's analyst issued a report, looking at a report by SBM Intelligence, which is a local, you know, agency. University of Oxford, you know, analysts issued a report. And, you know, first, it's important to note that at the time when the president announced this policy, it was popular, you know. On Twitter, for instance, you know, which is where the digital elite congregate,
right,
there was a consensus that the naira needed to be floated.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's just like fuel subsidy. Almost every presidential candidate, you know, ran on this policy of fuel subsidy needs to go. You know, so this wasn't a, so when people now try to dissociate themselves from this, that, oh, this shouldn't have been done, is dishonest, because I know that many of the elites said this was the proper policy. Yeah. But now 9 months have passed.
Right.
And it doesn't look like it was a proper policy. Is this one of those situations like we've had with the American elite insisting that there was going to be a recession under Joe Biden last year? Didn't happen. It's one of those situations where a new government listened to its economic elite, but they made a mistake, you know? And if that's the case, how do we come out of this morass? Does the government think that this policy was a mistake? I mean, the CBN governor was in the media this week. And, you know, I can't speak to his state of mind, but he did feel like he was a bit overwhelmed with the scale of the slide. And I mean, again, I can't speak to his state of mind, but that's what he felt like.
Right, right.
And so it just has a sense that, okay, this was a mistake. You know, everybody thought it was the right thing to do,
right,
but it turned out not to be the right thing to do.
Sure.
In which case, and I want to ask about the ECOWAS, you know, statement you received yesterday. We've seen from yesterday, this is a president that is not unwilling to say, look, we were wrong, guys. You know, let's change this policy. Is that something we should do with this currency crisis?
Well, frankly, let me speak to that. I think the ECOWAS position of His Excellency, Mr. President, who serves as the chairman of the ECOWAS Authority of Heads of State and Government, is not necessarily some form of admission that he got it wrong initially. I think what it is a recognition of contemporary challenges and difficulties that weren't necessarily present when the first decision was made. And so I think any rational and responsible leader who has any sense of empathy and compassion for the plight of millions of people affected by these decisions would say, based on very malleable circumstances that are changing day to day, some of which go far beyond the region with respect to energy costs and food costs and things like this, that there should be an amendment on grounds of compassion. And I believe he had the will and the character to say, I'm ready to make this amendment for the sake of these people. And this is not in any way an affirmation or a justification or a validation, rather, of the decision taken by the military junta in Niger to do what they did. Now, with that said, I think that with respect to the CBN and how the CBN governor, what his general body language is or spoken word, what it is indicating, I think he's been very clear on more than one occasion, including his most recent statements, is about the fact that he has a great hope for the Nigerian economy and a great hope that the nation's financial system will be not just better than, not just the way it was before, but much better than it was before, because he's putting in place guardrails and standards that would, through legislation, that will be very difficult to reverse. For example, we will never again, after Godwin Emefiele's era, have a situation where a day-to-day CBN governor is going to chair any board of directors. That's never going to happen again. But I also think that once we are able to establish the guardrails, that even the most sophisticated networks of elites will not be able to work through and work around, we are going to see not just a gross appreciation of the currency from where it currently is, but we're going to have a long-term predictability and stability of the value of our currency. And that's what we're working toward. Yes, on the one hand, I want Nigerians to appreciate this, that on the one hand, we're dealing with a crisis of this moment that we have to solve in this moment. Mm-hmm. But the way we solve it in this moment is not dealing with just this moment. Mm-hmm. This is the position of CBN Governor Cardoso as well as President Bola Tinubu, as we're dealing with the crisis of this moment, we're dealing with it in the context of a long-term solution so that we never have to go back to this moment. Another element of this is dealing with the crisis of the moment in a way that puts us on long-term sustainability, which is what we see in Lagos and which is what he wants for the Federal Republic long after he leaves office.
Right, right. The government is definite that this policy was not a mistake.
Oh, absolutely. I think he just said it about 2 days ago that there's no going back on this.
Yeah.
Whatever it takes, no matter what it takes, we have to break through this ceiling on our collective destiny. We all know that this is a problem. We know that the reason, for example, why we cannot attract large-scale foreign direct investment is because foreign investors look at our country and they say, well, you have budgets that are totally constrained by these massive subsidies, not just on electricity, but on fuel, on the foreign exchange market, for example. And as a result of that, Nigeria is never going to be able to make the investments in the soft and hard infrastructure that's required to ensure that cost of business goes down for us, that we have access to foreign exchange liquidity to ensure that we can actually repatriate our funds in foreign exchange when we make it. If we don't have those fundamentals, we can't even begin to invest. And without investment, you can't get hundreds of millions of jobs that are going to be required for the Nigeria of today and the future. Mm. Government, as we all know, will never have enough money to create enough jobs for the number of Nigerians that require them. It is always going to be dependent on the private sector and foreign investment. Mm. If foreign investment isn't coming in because you have these fundamentals of budgets that are drained by subsidies and you're unable to invest in the things you need to invest in to bring in these investments, then you have this wicked self-fulfilling cycle that just continues and continues until you break that cycle.
We need you to subscribe, yo!
And the reason is simple. The kinds of conversations, the kinds of worlds that we construct with our conversations on with Chude are driven by a vision of the kind of world I want to see, you know? You are the most important person in this entire ecosystem. You subscribing monthly. So do go ahead, subscribe, ask somebody else to subscribe, advise somebody else to subscribe, refer to someone to subscribe, and don't forget to leave a review or drop a rating. It helps more people discover this podcast. It matters, truly. Thank you, as we continue to be human together.